It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts.
St. Louis is home for conservative talk.
You're listening to the Mark Reardon Show.
As the president has said time and time again, this is not normal. This is not normal. Students and teachers deserve to know that their schools are safe. They should focus on learning, not lockdowns.
Well, that's KJP in the briefing room a little bit earlier in the aftermath of yet another school shooting, this one down in a rural area outside of Atlanta, about 50 minutes outside of Atlanta. We've been covering that extensively here this afternoon. We know that there were four people who were killed, two students and two teachers. Another five were taken to hospital, some with significant injuries. We know that the shooter was just 14 years old. And Jeff Murdoch, who is the White House correspondent for The Washington Times, you were in that briefing room this afternoon. How are you, Jeff?
I'm doing great. How are you doing today, Mark?
Good. I'm guessing you've been in the briefing room way too many times when we had a school shooting like today, right?
Yes. And it's interesting. The administration, they keep trotting out the same talking point, which is ban assault weapons. I think that, you know, there's a lot of ways to address school shootings, and they keep going back to the same talking point.
Well, that's not unexpected, right? And look, it's hard to disagree with KJP on the broader points she makes. I mean, this gets sickening to me when I have to come on here and talk about this and think about what parents are going through. I've got a 9-year-old that's in fourth grade right now. I can't even imagine being home from work or trying to go home tonight knowing that either my child was shot and killed or a classmate or a teacher. I mean, we had kids that were dragging out a teacher trying to save his life earlier today in this particular area. But yeah, it always goes from the White House, even without any of the details or the information, to that point. Look, here's the question I'd like answered in that briefing room. I just talked to this guy, Jeff, who's down in Nashville, Michael Patrick Leahy. They released this Audrey Hale manifesto yesterday. And one of the things that Michael told me is they're going to work in Tennessee on providing more mental health resources and making sure when you have things that really jump out at you when it comes to some of these kids and what they're going through, that it's reported to proper authorities. So I don't know if that came up in the briefing room about mental health, but seemingly is pretty important.
That was not a conversation that came up in the briefing room. It was a kind of a hectic briefing today because we had John Kirby there to talk to us about Israel and Ukraine. We had a lot of domestic issues. And at that point, we didn't have a lot of facts on the school shooting. We had we knew that there was a school shooting, but we didn't know what the casualties were. So there wasn't a lot of discussion about it in the briefing room today.
Let's talk about what's been going on here the last couple of weeks, because you're just now getting back into those with KJP. They took a bit of a rest during the convention. And then I think last week as well. That's not unusual after a convention, right? Or even this time of year with the holiday, Jeff.
No, that's correct. It's not unusual for any administration to take a bit of time. And usually for most administrations, if the president's not at the White House, they typically don't do a briefing. President Biden was on vacation last week. Everybody was at the DNC the week before. So between the holiday, the president's vacation, the DNC, there has not been a briefing for quite a while.
So I don't know if you can do a personal favor for me, but you're going to be in the briefing room again this week, maybe tomorrow. Can you ask this is a simple question, okay? Let's see if you can get this one. Who the hell is running the country right now? Can you ask KJP that? Because I don't know that we know the answer to that, do we, Jeff?
We don't know the answer to that. And that question has been asked by repeatedly, and we in multiple ways, and we get a vague answer. I think my favorite was the question, you know, a missile's coming for the United States at 3 a.m., who takes the call? And the answer we got to that is, well, the president has a team.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that should be alarming to any American, because who's on the team? What does the, you know, what? How are they qualified to handle this emergency?
It seems, Jeff, that, well, and, you know, I don't want to put you in the position to have to comment on other media members, but let's face it, in the 8 weeks or however long it's been since Biden got out, there has not really been any attempt on the part of most of the media to get to the bottom of what really happened in the White House and how serious some of these cognitive issues, you know, that led to this decision were in the last year, the last 2 years. I don't know if that'll ever really be tackled by the New York Times or the Washington Post. Now, I understand there's other things in the news cycle, but that seemingly is something that should be tracked down by the legacy media, Jeff.
I do agree that there's been an curiosity about it. But the time to ask those questions was 2021, 2022, 2023, when he was doing things that raised alarms on a lot of people. I remember October of 2023, after a series of issues, I asked John Kirby about it, and I couldn't get an answer. And it's striking that that was the first time anybody had asked that question that I can recall in a while about what was going on with the president. And it seems like now there was a bit of curiosity when he was still the candidate, and then everybody just lost interest again once he dropped out of the race.
It does seem like that. Now, let's talk about Israel, because this becomes an important question surrounding this very issue. The news cycle, and we've been doing it on this show, too, this shooting in Georgia is dominating right now. But John Kirby's up there. I didn't see any clips from this issue of Israel and where we are with Netanyahu right now seemingly is a pretty important issue on the global stage. And we don't know where the president is. What did you hear from John Kirby today on the topic of Israel?
Well, the big thing that they were hammering, that the White House was hammering today, and this was in a conference call after it, is how close they are to an agreement to bring the hostages home. I believe they said there's a dispute over three paragraphs that the White House characterized as a minor dispute. They feel once they can get that together, they can bring these hostages back. And that's been the White House's big focus today, that how close they are to an agreement, or at least that they say they are.
And what about, were there questions asked about the relationship with Bibi right now and how that seemingly continues to fray?
Yes, it seems like from this administration, they just continue to hector him, and they continue to make sure that they have distanced themselves from him as a way to keep, you know, Kamala Harris in the good graces of the progressives, who blame him for the lack of a hostage deal.
Yeah.
Or lack of, for the hostage deaths, I should say.
Well, it the whole thing right now, and I don't know if Kamala Harris is being asked about any of this related to Israel. I can only imagine what her answers might be. And I don't know what your expectation will be. You're not going to be at the debate because you cover, you know, Washington proper. Will you be at that debate next week covering that or not?
I will probably be having a hand in covering it. I don't believe I'm going to Philadelphia to cover.
So what are your expectations for that debate? Do you have any?
Right now, I don't, because we haven't really seen much from either one in terms of debating. I mean, the vice president did one heavily scripted, heavily edited interview. She did not have a primary, so there was no debating there. So her last debate was 2019.
That was a long time ago.
A long time ago, you know, former President Trump, that debate against President Biden was a layup because of the president's cognitive issues during that debate. So I don't know that we can look at that as any measure of his debating skills. And he also skipped the primary. He also did not participate in primary debates. So he hasn't really had a debate since 2020. So it'll be really interesting to see how they come out, because neither one of them have been tested in a debate format.
Well, and what's interesting to me, I don't know if people do this, but I'm weird this way because I'm a talk show host, Jeff, but I've literally spent some time this week thinking about what might happen on that stage. And from this perspective, I remember going into, and we have another debate watch party here at Dave and Buster's, Sue, as you know, and it's sold out. Yeah. But I remember that night when we were at Dave and Buster's, kind of, you know, we all were sitting back thinking, what will happen? And nobody in that room, Jeff Warnock, probably not you, nobody ever envisioned that bad of a performance from Biden. We thought it could be shaky, but it was just awful. And it was awful from the very beginning. But even when you think of Kamala right now, she has that awkwardness in some of her answers. You indicated that was a heavily scripted and very controlled interview that she did last week. If she's put on the spot on a serious issue, good Lord, I don't know what might happen, Jeff Warnock.
That is a great point. And, you know, not only has she not been tested in a debate setting, she's not handling questions from the media.
No.
So she doesn't even have that as sort of a way to practice or warm up or anything for the debate. I mean, she has not been tested. And, you know, that CNN interview, what struck me about it, the simplest question in that debate, what are your priorities on day one? She was unable to answer that question. She kind of, some gobbledygook about putting the American people first and working for the middle class and all of that. But there was, I mean, you could drop me in and I could come up with a more coherent answer.
Right.
Well, I would sign an executive order on immigration, or I would sign this executive order to secure the border. Or I would, you know, sign this executive order to do this for the economy. She really scrambled with that. She really struggled with that answer. And honestly, that answer should not have been that hard. I mean, that was a softball question.
So did this come up today? You know, one of the things that happened this morning before all the coverage shifted toward what happened outside of Atlanta is Merrick Garland held a news conference and they accused Russia of attempting to interfere in this presidential election. And they filed charges against some people and they say they seized more than 24 internet domains used in foreign malign influence campaigns directed by the Russians. I have some comments on that, but did that also come up in the briefing room today?
It did, because John Kirby brought it up, but he didn't get into much detail. I mean, some of the questions were, you know, which candidate was they supporting things, and he would not get into detail at all. Because I did not see Merrick Garland's press conference on it, but I don't believe from the little bit that I did see that he went into any more granular detail about
that. Okay, I was just curious because, look, you know, my line would be they announced that the Justice Department seized 32 internet domains that were used for Russian disinformation. Was one of them the New York Times and another the Washington Post? That would be my question for Merrick Garland. Jeff Warnock, awesome to have you on as usual. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mark. You have a great week.
I appreciate it. Look, and I make that point because I think it's pretty clear at this point. They want to talk about Russian disinformation. I can talk about American media malpractice, misinformation about a litany of topics that they don't want to discuss and circle back to, and it's stunning.
Right.
So Merrick Garland, and I sent this to Fred because, you know, I'm monitoring, he's monitoring, and Fred's here at the station. I'm often out and about or I'm at home, and I'm like, Merrick Garland is just a snoozer. It's just a snooze fest. Don't worry about any of the audio. But I did find it kind of comedic, not that I don't want them to be involved in taking down, you know, malicious sites or things that are,
sure,
you know, illicit. But on the other hand, I can't believe a word that this guy's saying.
I know, that's
there's
the
no
problem.
Credibility. They're going to go and try to shift some news coverage into Russian misinformation when we know from the very beginning, of course, the Russians are interfering in our election. We do the same damn thing. But what we do know is that all these allegations from Russian disinformation from 2016 were not the way that they were manufactured
right.
and sold to us in the media. So whenever I see Merrick Garland, and I can't even believe that that guy used to be someone that was in consideration for the Supreme Court. Remember, he was going to be the nominee from Obama before Mitch McConnell said, nope, we're not voting this year because it's an election year.
Yep.
A couple other stories I want to get to here before we get to our friend George Rosenthal. This is one of those things that I would put in the category of nanny state nonsense, Sue, but I'm going to toss this out to you. I saw this in the LA Times this morning. A bill awaiting approval from Governor Gavin Newsom would require vehicles to include a warning system to alert drivers anytime they went more than 10 miles over the speed limit.
Well, that's completely asinine.
So here, I have a warning system to tell me when I'm 10 miles over the speed limit. It's called a speedometer.
Correct.
And you look down and you see what the speed limit is and you know that you're going over. So they say, this is what drives me crazy. And I'll kind of fold this into a conversation. Let me do it this way. So I met a guy by the name of Paul Coletti today. He came down to the station. He's with the British Broadcasting Corporation, the BBC. And he's the producer of a radio show, a radio hour, news and information hour that they run on the BBC that's carried by 490 outlets nationwide.
Cow.
Right. It's a big show. And they don't, believe it or not, they have it on many NPR stations, but not the one here in St. Louis. I'm told that there's a government-subsidized station here, NPR station in St. Louis. I know nothing of that. But I bring it up because Paul is here in town with the crew from the BBC, a couple of different reasons. He was honest. They're trying to lobby the NPR station to carry their program. So they're doing an hour-long segment from St. Louis on Monday. He got in yesterday. And what they're focusing in on, two things. One is the abortion amendment, because it's in a red state. But the other is Midwestern sensibility. In other words, he's going to ask me and Jane Duker. We're going to both sit down with the BBC on Sunday somewhere, probably lovely on the hill, with his host. And we're going to talk about what makes the Midwest unique compared to the coast. And one of the reasons Paul said they wanted to come here is because they always go to New York, they go to Boston, they go to LA, they go to San Francisco. So how about come to the heart of America and find out what folks in the flyover states are thinking about?
It's a great idea.
It is. But one of the things, I'm going to tie this back to California, and I've said this for years, I've lived in three different states, Illinois, Wisconsin, and in Missouri. Missouri, far more than any other place. I was in Milwaukee for just shy of 10 years and in Chicago until I was 14 years old. But I love the fact that we don't get into nanny state nonsense in Missouri like they do in Illinois. And maybe the best example of that would be a primary seatbelt enforcement law. What that means is, and I want people to wear their seatbelts, and I wear my seatbelt, right? My daughter wears a seatbelt. I wear seatbelts in back seats now. I didn't even used to do that. But I don't think that law enforcement, I love them. I love my brothers and sisters in law enforcement. We want you to protect us. But I don't want to give a police officer the right to pull me over simply because I'm driving past Enterprise Center in downtown St. Louis and I don't apparently, or it seems like I don't have a seatbelt on. If they want to pull me over because I have an expired tag that's three, oh wait, they don't do that. But you know, if there's another reason,
right,
and then they find that I don't have a seatbelt on, they issue me a ticket, I'm okay with that because that's cool. I want people to wear their seatbelt. But I don't want them to have the enforcement opportunity that they do in Illinois, because I think that that's something that is absolutely perfect for an abuse of power. Now, same thing in LA here. This is nanny state nonsense. I'm not saying that law enforcement's getting involved here, but this is what they're dealing with in California. When you have hundreds of thousands of people that are fleeing the state to go to Texas and Florida and other states, Nevada, because they can't take the bureaucracy. There was something that happened this week. Somebody was telling me something about a permit, and I can't remember. It was someone that I was working with something at my house. Anyway, they said that the permit took like a couple of weeks. Oh, this was my wife's aunt is getting a little project done at her house in Jeffco.
Okay.
And the guy that's doing the project said, yeah, there was a bit of a delay. Jeffco took a couple of weeks. And my comment to her was, well, you should feel lucky, because if that was in California, it would literally take 2 years. And I'm not exaggerating that. You know, if you want to go back to this part in the pandemic a few years ago, remember when we heard about oxygen shortages?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, there was no oxygen
shortage. Of course
not. Okay. There was my friend who appears on the show, Rick Niner from Las Vegas. That's his industry. Oxygen and nitrogen, industrial gases. And what he explained to me is that, you know, you have liquid oxygen.
Yeah.
The difficulty was making the liquid oxygen become breathable oxygen. And the infrastructure for that is rather difficult. He works with companies that have these big tanks outside of hospitals, right? But one of the things that stuck out is he said, look, you have a lot of these businesses and even hospitals in rural areas that if they wanted to change the infrastructure for the liquid, you know, oxygen tanks, it takes so damn long because of the bureaucracy. It literally takes years for the permitting, so they can't get anything done. So when they're in a situation like an emergency during a pandemic, when they're trying to get people proper oxygen and they can't do it because of the bureaucracy. So California wants to pass a law that Gavin Newsom will no doubt sign that will make any model cars from 2030 and beyond except for emergency vehicles, motorcycles, and motorized bicycles, to have this sort of technology that would, I guess, allow you, and this is the part that I don't understand, would it automatically, it says the system would alert drivers with a visual and audio signal each time they went over the speed limit by 10 miles per hour. The European Union already requires the technology. That would be the best example of why we don't want to do it, because Europe's doing it. Stop
exactly.
doing that. I guess Toyota uses a system in the U.S. Now, it says it would not physically limit the speed of a car, all right? So that's good. Some people are talking about that. But is it something, I'm okay with it if manufacturers of automobiles want to put that in your car.
Right, if they do it, if
but
they want to.
I am totally against the state of California or any other state forcing car manufacturers to put this in their vehicles. It's nanny state nonsense. It's about control. It's not about safety.
No.
You're not making anyone safer. It's ridiculous. Yeah, but that's just California's priorities. By the way, the same priorities of most of the lawmakers in Cook County, Illinois, not those of you in Southern Illinois. Same priorities as the idiots on the Board of Aldermen here in St. Louis. There's a little bit of a pattern. It starts with a D.
It's better over here.
After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit service ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, here's another topic I have not really gotten to this week, and I think it's an important one. Let me give you a little background here. We'll welcome George Rosenthal from ThrottleNet into the fray this afternoon. So Brazil was very concerned about a bunch of disinformation around its presidential election in 2022. So the Supreme Court of that nation made a very fateful decision. They gave one justice, Alexandre de Moraes, sweeping powers to order social media to take down content that he thought threatened democracy. This is so dangerous. By the way, there's people in this country that would let this happen here. And what he's done is he's carried out a very aggressive campaign to clean up the internet according to the way he thinks it should be cleaned up. But one of the things that happened, and you know, they've gotten rid of a bunch of different sites down there in Brazil. This same guy then blocks, and he's had this, you know, kind of dust up with Elon Musk for a while, but he blocks X, formerly Twitter, across Brazil because Elon Musk ignored a court order to remove accounts and then close the X office in Brazil. George is with us from ThrottleNet to kind of explain some of this. I think I gave a little bit of the background there. How are you this afternoon?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me back on. And yes, it's disturbing. This is happening all over the world. And the free speech topic is slowly becoming the most important topic because that is the beginning of all freedoms in democracy. But this is being shut down specifically because this specific one judge said that these particular users of X in Brazil were putting out disinformation. Now, that's his opinion, of course. That goes back to the whole why Elon bought Twitter or X to begin with, was to make sure that you could have free speech. But of course, any type of hate speech or any type of really bad things would be taken down. This is not just that. He's wiping out all speech on the right side altogether. So all conservative speech is being wiped out completely. And Elon said, no. He said, I'm not going to do that. And on top of that, this is the beginning of how, you know, your democracy falls apart. And he said, fine, if you're going to do that, we're going to ban you across the country. And then we're going to fine you tens and tens of thousands of dollars a day.
Jeez.
For anyone in the country who goes to use a virtual private network. So if you use a VPN and you route yourself through Europe and try and access X in Brazil that way, then X will get a massive fine on a daily basis every time they're using it.
So I thought I saw something that Elon was trying to do with a bit of a back channel. Is that with Starlink? Is that something that I'm imagining?
Yes, yes, it is exactly right. I was going to get to that.
The Love Starlink, it.
I laugh. Yeah, exactly. It cracks me up because it's Elon. You know, when are you going to silence Elon or stop the man? So he said, fine, I'm going to put Starlink over top of your country, and we're going to broadcast straight down, and now you can't cut it off.
I love that.
Because the devices can talk directly to my satellites in space, and you can't stop me. So now he is vowing, this judge in Brazil is vowing to get rid of Starlink somehow, but I don't know how you're going to do that.
Good luck.
These thousands of satellites are above your country talking to the individual devices.
How do you shut down X in a particular country? So how is there an easy way to explain the process and how that's regulated?
Yes. Yeah, so what they do is they go through the internet providers. So imagine going through the Spectrum, the AT&T, any type of the internet providers. They then force, this is the same way they talked about shutting off TikTok in America, was forcing those companies to stop using or stop directing all traffic to those specific sites. So there's a way to do it. It's corrupt as can be, but there's definitely a way to do it.
George, I love this. There was a quote in the New York Times. They wrote about this, and there's a guy that they featured by the name of David Niemer. David is a Brazilian-born media professor, that's how he's described, who has studied his nation's approach to disinformation at the Berkman Klein Center for Internet and Society at Harvard University. He goes, this is his quote, "I was someone who was very on his side," talking about this judge. "But when we saw the X decision, we were like, what the hell? This is too much," he said, using an expletive. "It was a warning to all of us. My response is, hey, dude, pay attention. Some of us know that this should have been a warning sign a long time ago, right?"
Correct. Yes. I mean, where does it stop? I know the slippery slope term is used way too often, but this is now real. Where does it stop? So where do you, when do you go to the next site and start shutting down that because you don't like the way people are talking? Just because you don't like their opinions doesn't mean you have to shut them down. But again, it's different than hate speech. They're talking about shutting everything down that's not on their side.
Right.
And that is so dangerous. So dangerous. And that's the point. I mean, it's the beginning of the end of democracy.
Yeah. It is.
Well, that's the great irony when you hear the warnings from this White House about democracy. Now, some of this is also happening on, the other side of the planet, across the pond with J.K. Rowling and Elon Musk. Some of the things I'm seeing out of the UK and what they're doing with crackdowns on internet are just shocking to me.
They really are. Yeah, it's getting out of control when it comes to the regulations on internet. And again, look, I know there's another side to it. Some sites can be very hateful. Maybe there's things that are against a certain religion or a certain group of people. Totally understand that. But we're talking about basic free speech. And it, like I said, it's becoming not just a Brazilian issue. This is becoming a worldwide epidemic of the failure of democracy. And that's how it all starts, is with the removal of free speech. And thank goodness there's a guy like Elon Musk that's out there putting a stop to it.
I would agree on that front for sure. But, I know this is a big, big issue, and it's hard to get your arms around it. As you indicated, George, I understand the concern over dangerous things out there, but wow, I'm certainly going to side on the, I'm going to fall down on the side of free speech or, as much information as possible.
Absolutely. I mean, isn't it interesting what happened with Facebook or Meta? Zuckerberg came out literally last week and provided a letter that said, yes, the government asked us to change the way we talked about COVID and change the way we talked about the election. So the actual federal government, the current administration, was forcing Facebook to remove or change the way people talked.
It's crazy.
And he admitted it in a letter. So, yeah, it's definitely a different world, and it's been going on for a while. All people all over the internet, what happens is this is how dark websites pop up, is because they want to have conversations that aren't regulated by the government. But the problem is that doesn't go to the masses.
I mentioned this earlier, and there's been so much, there's a school shooting outside of Atlanta. But this morning, part of the coverage on Fox even was the Attorney General Merrick Garland, the feeble old man that he is. But he was up there talking about how they have gone after a bunch of things related to Russian disinformation and interference with our election this year. They're not going back to previous years. They're talking about this year. Now, my comment on that would be, if you really want to look at disinformation and media manipulation, let's look at the New York Times and the Washington Post and sites like that. But in that news conference and in that appearance this morning, they talked about taking down a bunch of sites. Are you familiar with what they did there?
Yes. So there's 32 domains that they took, internet domains. So for those who don't know, that's a website. So they took down essentially 32 websites that were proven to have been funded by the Russian government itself through a Tennessee-based company. So basically what happened is Russia gave this Tennessee company $10 million to create these websites and then said, look, we'll keep paying you as long as you keep posting our stuff. So that was actually found out to happen, and that's why they took down the sites. They were pushing everything from, obviously, anti-U.S. to anti-Ukraine content. And, of course, as soon as that starts happening, you have to start looking at, okay, if it's anti-Ukraine, who's pushing this and what, or, you know, who's paying for it? And so it came out that that was the Russians actually funneling money through this Tennessee company.
So one more topic. This is completely different, but maybe the most important thing that we can share with our audience. We know, and it's been reported that there's been cyber theft of 2.9 billion records of Social Security information, et cetera. So what should we be concerned about there, and are there steps that we can take?
Yes, this is extremely concerning. In fact, there's an actual cybersecurity firm that just does penetration testing. They have collected the entire list of stolen data, all 2.9 billion records, and they put it out on the web. If you go to, it's NPD, just stands for a National Public Data, so NPD.10, P-E-N, tester, T-E-S-T-E-R.com. Again, that's NPD, pen. I'm sorry, MPD, period, pentester.com. You'll be able to put in your information and see if it was stolen and what's out there. I would highly recommend three things. Number one, if you're not going to buy a car, a house, or anything in the near future, go out to each credit bureau and freeze your credit immediately so that your Social Security number cannot be used. Because if you find your information on npd.pentester.com, that means it's out on the dark web for sale. You want to make sure you have identity theft protection of some sort. Go sign up for anything from LifeLock to Aura. There's so many different types out there. And then always pay attention to your bank and credit cards. If you find anything weird, you have to act immediately. Call the companies, tell them it's not your charge, et cetera, and then start looking into it.
Give me that website. I tried to type that into my iPad, and I don't think I did it right. NPD, period.
Yep. N is in Nancy, P is in Paul, D is in David, dot pen. P as in Paul, E-N, just like a writing pen. And then it's tester, T-E-S-T-E-R.com. So it's NPD.PEN, tester.com.
So when that comes up, it says, well, this one doesn't put that. It
no,
says
I've
diagnostic.
Got it.
Does it look the same as mine?
No.
What am I doing wrong?
I don't know.
Okay.
Mine just says first name, last name, state,
that's
birth
it.
Year.
Yeah, so you go ahead and put that in, and then if your information comes up, it'll show all previous addresses that you may have lived at. It'll show the birthday. It'll show your zip code, if any one of those is yours, and then it'll show the last two numbers of your Social Security number. If you find your name on one of that on that list, that means that officially, not only were you involved in that data breach, but your information that information is now for sale on the dark web. That can include your home address, birthday, SOCH, everything personal about you.
That's not good. I don't like hearing that. But I'm also very confused as how Sue can pull that up. And I typed the same damn thing in, and it didn't take me to anything. So I'm going to figure that out.
Yeah, I'll look at it.
Yeah, we'll take a look at it. But George, thanks for the information. This is so important. The latter part of this conversation probably more important than anything for people to kind of keep an eye and track that credit stuff. We'll have you back. Thank you so much, George Rosenthal.
Absolutely. Thank you. Have a great day.
Throttlenet.com. Check it out. Audio cut of the day. I like that one because it makes no sense to
me,
and I'm the host. But I like playing that one because I'm very confused by hearing it.
Me too.
Two things. Am I well-meaning? And maybe occasionally.
Sometimes.
Sometimes I'm well-meaning.
Yeah.
Do I have a good memory?
Well,
no.
It's not terrible.
No. Oh, it's pretty terrible, I think. Yeah.
All right.
So you know what I did today, though? You know what I started today?
Mm-mm.
My, I don't know if I told you about this. I'm a podcaster now, Sue. I do a podcast. And I started my podcast today.
Tell me about it.
Okay, this is actually serious, and we're going to release this in a couple of months. I've shared the story. I don't want to share too much because it is the topic of the podcast, but I'm sitting down, and we actually started today at my friend Vance Crowe's studio. Vance does legacy interviews, sits down with your parents, your grandparents to, you know, have them tell you your life story so your grandkids and you know, their great-grandchildren can hear the story. Anyway, Chris Smith, my friend who was shot It will now be 3 years ago, the night before Thanksgiving, this coming Thanksgiving.
Man.
48 Hours came in this summer and did a story on him that will air right before, you know, the anniversary of this terrible tragedy. Leslie Reeves, the woman that he was with that night, was shot and killed. Chris was left for dead, spent 12 hours in his home bleeding out. His dog was next to him, and he somehow survived. And I, at the time, didn't think I'd ever hear from this guy again because we became friends. So when I heard about the 48 Hours thing, I thought, you know what? And we've talked about different projects and trying to get this on, you know, the radar of people. Well, 48 Hours, it was on their radar, which is a good thing. But I said to Chris, I'm like, you know what? Let's just do a podcast. So we're going to do a podcast. We're going to time the release of it a little bit closer to Thanksgiving and share his story.
That's
people
great.
Can watch it on 48 Hours, but it really is an amazing story.
It is. It,
just the crime aspect of it, but then his recovery and everything he's doing you know, since then. So anyway, we started the process today, and it was very fun. We're going to keep doing it, and I'll have some more details as we have this thing evolve. But, you know, that's me. I'm a podcaster, Sue. Just keep that in mind. That's what
I see. Well, History of the Loot with Sue is a podcast, and this show is a podcast.
I'm late to the game, though, because History of the Loot with Sue is established out there, one of the top 10 podcasts in all of America.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
Well, I'm just going to say it sucks. Every time I have to talk about a story like this, it just sucks.
It's just multiple shots, rapid fires, and like two times, maybe like two rounds. Like, it was just constant, and it just didn't stop. At first, we just thought it was like just something falling down, because we always hear that stuff, but it was like rapid. And then we had the little hardware lockdown thing on the little board, and then they closed the doors, and we barricaded the doors and everything.
Yeah, this is a high school that is outside of Atlanta, about 50 minutes away. The kids are there. It's 9:30 in the morning, and a 14-year-old opens fire. Some details on what we found out about the shooter and some other details from Chris Hobie, who is with the Georgia Bureau of Investigation.
At approximately 10:20 a.m. this morning, the Bexar County Sheriff's Office received alerts about reports of an active shooter and radio traffic from school resource officers having the same concern. Within minutes, law enforcement was on scene, as well as two school resource officers assigned here to the school, who immediately encountered the subject within just minutes of this report going out. Once they encountered the subject immediately surrendered to these officers, and he was taken into custody. Additionally, what I want you to know as of now, there are four individuals who are deceased from this incident, nine that have been taken to local hospitals with various injuries. Of those that are deceased, two are students and two are teachers here at the school.
Appalachian High School in Winder, Georgia, and a 14-year-old. I don't like mentioning these shooters' names, and I will not do it, but this really stuck with me today.
Mr. Aswan did have a gunshot wound to the bottom of his chest. He was bleeding out. Some other kids got up, and they dragged his body inside and closed the door. After they dragged him in, I started barricading the door with all the things I could find. Well, me and some other kids, we lifted up his shirt, see where the gunshot wound was, maybe try and stop it, put some pressure on it. The bleeding would not stop, so we kind of just stopped until the cops got there.
Yeah, that is a senior at that high school who was trying to save his own math teacher, and that math teacher did not make it, unfortunately. I usually say have a good night, but it's going to be a somber night for people thinking about this. Sue, we'll talk tomorrow at 3.
Okay.
Get more at 971talk.com.
I like that one because it makes no sense to
me,
and I'm the host. But I like playing that one because I'm very confused by hearing it.
Me too.
Two things. Am I well-meaning? And maybe occasionally.
Sometimes
I'm well-meaning.
Yeah.
Do I have a good memory?
Well,
no.
It's not terrible.
No. Oh, it's pretty terrible, I think. Yeah.
All right.
So you know what I did today, though? You know what I started today?
Mm-mm.
My, I don't know if I told you about this. I'm a podcaster now, Sue. I do a podcast, and I started my podcast today.
Tell me about it.
Okay, this is actually serious, and we're going to release this in a couple of months. I've shared the story. I don't want to share too much because it is the topic of the podcast, but I'm sitting down, and we actually started today at my friend Vance Crowe's studio. Vance does legacy interviews, sits down with your parents, your grandparents to, you know, have them tell you your life story so your grandkids and you know their great-grandchildren can hear the story. Anyway, Chris Smith, my friend who was shot It will now be 3 years ago, the night before Thanksgiving, this coming Thanksgiving.
Man.
48 Hours came in this summer and did a story on him that will air right before, you know, the anniversary of this terrible tragedy. Leslie Reeves, the woman that he was with that night, was shot and killed. Chris was left for dead, spent 12 hours in his home bleeding out. His dog was next to him, and he somehow survived. And I, at the time, didn't think I'd ever hear from this guy again because we became friends. So when I heard about the 48 Hours thing, I thought, you know what? And we've talked about different projects and trying to get this on, you know, the radar of people. Well, 48 Hours, it was on their radar, which is a good thing. But I said to Chris, I'm like, you know what? Let's just do a podcast. So we're going to do a podcast. We're going to time the release of it a little bit closer to Thanksgiving and share his story.
That's
people
great.
Can watch it on 48 Hours, but it really is an amazing story.
It is. It,
just the crime aspect of it, but then his recovery and everything he's doing you know, since then. So anyway, we started the process today, and it was very fun. We're going to keep doing it, and I'll have some more details as we have this thing evolve. But, you know, that's me. I'm a podcaster, Sue. Just keep that in mind. That's what
I see. Well, History of the Loot with Sue is a podcast, and this show is a podcast.
I'm late to the game, though, because History of the Loot with Sue is established out there, one of the top 10 podcasts in all of America.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
Well, I'm just going to say it sucks. Every time I have to talk about a story like this, it just sucks.
It's just multiple shots, rapid fires, and like two times, maybe like two rounds. Like, it was just constant, and it just didn't stop. At first, we just thought it was like just something falling down, because we always hear that stuff, but it was like rapid. And then we had the little hardware lockdown thing on the little board, and then they closed the doors, and we barricaded the doors and everything.
Yeah, this is a high school that is outside of Atlanta, about 50 minutes away. The kids are there. It's 9:30 in the morning, and a 14-year-old opens fire. Some details on what we found out about the shooter and some other details from Chris Hobie, who is with the Georgia Bureau of Investigation.
At approximately 10:20 a.m. this morning, the Bexar County Sheriff's Office received alerts about reports of an active shooter and radio traffic from school resource officers having the same concern. Within minutes, law enforcement was on scene, as well as two school resource officers assigned here to the school, who immediately encountered the subject within just minutes of this report going out. Once they encountered the subject immediately surrendered to these officers, and he was taken into custody. Additionally, what I want you to know as of now, there are four individuals who are deceased from this incident. Nine that have been taken to local hospitals with various injuries. Of those that are deceased, two are students and two are teachers here at the school.
Appalachian High School in Winder, Georgia, and a 14-year-old. I don't like mentioning these shooters' names, and I will not do it, but this really stuck with me today.
Mr. Aswan did have a gunshot wound to the bottom of his chest. He was bleeding out. Some other kids got up and they dragged his body inside and closed the door. After they dragged him in, I started barricading the door with all the things I could find. Well, me and some other kids, we lifted up his shirt, see where the gunshot wound was, maybe try and stop it, put some pressure on it. The bleeding would not stop, so we kind of just stopped until the cops got there.
Yeah, that is a senior at that high school who was trying to save his own math teacher, and that math teacher did not make it, unfortunately. I usually say have a good night, but it's going to be a somber night for people thinking about this. Sue, we'll talk tomorrow at 3.
Okay.
Get more at 971talk.com.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.